Hello, young lovers, whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say don't cry because I'm alone.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. David Stanley with us spent 17 years growing up with his iconic stepbrother, Elvis Presley. And from 1960 to 1977, he was the young apprentice to an Elvis few knew. Elvis the mystic, Elvis the healer. Now today, David is a best-selling author, he's a speaker, and he's a teacher in the field of self-development and authenticity. And he's been a frequent guest on Larry King Live. He's been on Good Morning America, CBS This Morning, and many, many others. He is also the author of the new book, Conversations with the King, Journal of a Young Apprentice. And David, hi. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. You know, there was a word, spirituality. There was an Elvis, I guess, that we didn't see. The Elvis that we saw as the entertainer, as the singer, as the king, quote unquote. There was a dimension of this man, from what you're saying, that the world really didn't know about.
Well, that's true. You know, I spent 17 years with Elvis as a result of my mother, who divorced when I was just a baby, Marion Vernon Presley, Elvis Presley's widowed father. I moved into Graceland in 1960. I was only 4 years older, didn't know what an Elvis was or a hound dog was. I had no clue what was really happening. I just knew I had a new big brother. His name was Elvis Presley, and obviously he was quite famous. But, you know, to answer your question, there was a part of Elvis that the world didn't see, and that's the case with all of us. There's the three selves. There's the sanitized public image that the world knew of Elvis Presley, the high-collar sideburns singer, actor, all-American boy. There was that dark side, that side that, you know, eventually caught up with him and cost him his life at a very early age, and then the authentic spiritual side. And, of course, I saw all three sides, but it's the authentic spiritual side that I saw, a very highly evolved spiritual being Elvis was. He had a gift not only in his song, his magnetism, his charisma, but he had the gift of healing and prophecy. He was very much a seeker, reading hundreds of books, always trying to find out why him in that time and in that place and why he had been blessed so much. And so he was very much there, very much very spiritual Elvis.
You know, he said something very interesting, David. He searched for why him. Was it that why him question that caused him, quote unquote, to go to the dark side that you mentioned?
I think, exactly. You nailed it right on the head, spot on there. He, you know, Elvis had a brother that died at birth, a twin brother. And he always had that, why did he survive and not only survive, but become, you know, iconic. I mean, probably the most influential entertainer of the 20th century. His mother died in 1958, just as he was, you know, 2-3 years after he made it big. And he was just blessed with so much and so many gifts. I mean, everything he did turned to gold. Every record was a hit record. Every movie, silly but successful. That was very difficult. You know, I would be with Elvis and he would look out the window and 10,000 people are looking back. And he couldn't understand. Heck, I'm just a good old Southern boy. Why do these people love me as much as they do?
David, let me ask you this, and I want to jump in just for a moment because I want to make sure we're tracking with this, because I think it's extremely important. There's a very strong message in here for everyone. If we listen to it, I'm starting to hear it is starting to unfold now. Mm-hmm. But the question would be with working with him and being around him, the 17 years you were there, knowing how spiritual he was, what was that one overarching theme that held him back, and not held him back from being an entertainer and being loved, but is that humanness, that spirituality that you're talking about, that he was searching so hard to find? Did he ever slow down enough to let it happen to him, or was the search so strong that he missed it as he was looking?
I think that I'm going to go with Missed It As He Was Looking. Elvis was a giver. He's notorious. You've read the stories of giving cars away, money away, clothes away, jewelry. I mean, that was his true gift, was giving. But he was not much of a receiver. And I think that's, you know, we all have those three selves. Again, that dark side. In that dark self, we have a tendency to be self-destructive, self-sabotage. We feel oftentimes unworthy. We don't earn it. We don't deserve it. We don't feel that we should have it. And I think Elvis, because the dark side got so strong that he began to live in this situation to where I don't deserve all these wonderful things that are happening to me, all the money, the success, and the fortune and fame. And rather than receiving and letting people love, he went so deep, so inward, and such into a self-destructive ideology that he just couldn't come out of it. And that's where we lost him. When I walked in his bathroom on the 16th of August, I was amongst the first to discover his lifeless body. By the time that had happened, it was inevitable to us that it was around him. We watched him hit a self-destructive path, not listen, not receive, and he unfortunately died out of a lack of accountability. That's what I teach now is accountability, because I've seen somebody who had it all, who answered to no one, who didn't receive, ultimately, you know, destroy himself.
Sure, David, what you're really saying is Elvis had nothing. And when I say nothing, nothing coming from that spiritual place, nothing to anchor to. In your press release, I'm looking at something here which really tells what happened to the entire condition here. See, one of the last things Elvis said to you was, next time I see you, I'll be in a higher place on a different plane. And I think the key there, that statement in and of itself, is I can't be who I am on this planet. I can't be who I truly am with all the challenges, all of these things that I face that I can't overcome. So I'm going to get out of here and get to where I can be myself and finally come to peace.
Well, you know, I got to give you some credit here. Of course, obviously, you've been doing this for a long time, but you are asking the right questions, my friend. He was an individual that 2 days before he died, he looked at me and said those very words. I'll never, you know, I love you, David, a higher place, a different planet. 2 days later, I walked in his bathroom, discovered his lifeless body. Did Elvis check out? Did Elvis premeditate his death? And that's something I've pondered for the last 34 years and had to live with. I believe that God just took him home. We have to hit that spiritual button a little bit harder. Elvis was so highly spiritually evolved. Here was a man who was a healer, hands-on healer. He was an Assembly of God, Pentecostal background that believed that Jesus is the same today, tomorrow, and forever. You'll do these things and greater. I've seen this man lay hands on people. I saw a guy break his leg one night skiing. Elvis puts his hands on him, heals the leg. The guy jumps up like it's nothing. I've seen the man make wind blow, clouds move, unexplainable phenomena that only can come from the spiritual, authentic Elvis. And I believe that he was one of those highly evolved spiritual dudes. And with all of that in him, it was even that part, that much power from God in his mind was more than he could deal with. Not only the love from and the admiration of the fans, but this incredible gift of being able to walk out on stage. You know, we did Aloha from Hawaii in 1973, and 1.5 billion people watched that on television. He weighed 167 pounds. He was in the prime of his life. And 5 years later, he was 255 pounds, slurring words, self-medicated. But you know, the audience was always the same. It didn't matter if he sang. He could just stand there. His magnetism, his charisma, his presence was so powerful. And so when I did conversations with the King Generals of the Young Apprentice, I wanted to say, what created that? And I believe it was that spiritual authenticity. And when he died, did he wake up and say, as you said, I can't handle it here on earth, I got to split? Or did God just take him home? And I believe that God just took him home and it was at rest. When I saw Elvis laying there that day, no one hurt more than I did. 17 years of my life I spent with this guy. I didn't touch the cloth of the king. I was raised by this guy. I was 2 weeks from 22 years old. I was angry because I thought he checked out. But as I grew older, I came to the conclusion that his work was done. God took him home. And, you know, that night when he said a higher place in a different plane, I believe he was passing the torch to the young apprentice to talk about the three selves, the advantages of living in authenticity, the disadvantage of embracing the dark side, and the sanitized public self that we need to sometimes drop and be more transparent and let the world see who we really are. Only then, if there are problems, can we come to healing. Only then can we step into the greatness of our authentic self.
Okay, two things here. The one is, I think the real message that Elvis left, if people can see through the surface things, it was don't be afraid of yourself. And I think realistically, that's the message, is don't be afraid of yourself. Because if you take a look at why it's coming out now, so I'm you and I are probably about the same age. I remember in 1957, I'm standing at Nancy's Coffee Shop in Bell, California, and all of a sudden there is this music, and I said, Elvis who, right?
Right.
And became, right? But the point of contention is that in the 1950s, the 60s and 70s and 80s, even up to the 90s, the culture, the society, David, was not the way it is today.
That's true. There are people
that are frightened to death. There is no certainty out there in the world. And now's the time, but when I say now's the time for the book, to see not so much Elvis, but what Elvis meant, what Elvis represented. And if you get that message out, don't be afraid of yourself, because if you're afraid of yourself, you're going to hide. And if you hide, you die, you don't get active, and you don't change things the way they should be.
Well, I think that's an accurate depiction. I think that's a great description of what I'm trying to say. There's no question that Elvis Presley was great in his world of music. He was a pioneer. He was a prototype. He was the first superstar. I mean, a million people go through his house every year. 10,000 people stand in front of Graceland at the anniversary of his death holding a candle trying to get through. 2.5 billion records. You know, he was touched. He had a gift. And if he had just stepped into the authenticity of his spiritual self, perhaps things would have been different. But he didn't. I did. Here's the message. We're moving forward. We're perpetuating the message. There's something that could be learned from the king of rock and roll. And I think your description's right on. I think it's exactly what I'm trying to communicate. Step into who you are. Be transparent. Don't lurk in the darkness, self-destructiveness, self-doubt, and fear. Step forward, step ahead, be progressive, and perpetuate the gifts that God has given you. That's purely the message that I'm trying to communicate. Each chapter, 12 chapters, I have stories of conversations with Elvis that I had with him. Each chapter has a lesson, questions to ponder. And so here's a book that's an entertainment-driven book, but a self-help, self-development book. And I believe because everybody has a recognition of who or what Elvis might have been, that they'll discover who he really was and perhaps learn something from it.
You see, get somebody like Elvis. David, Elvis didn't die. Okay, 34 years ago, obviously, physically he went to a different plane. He went someplace else.
Right, but he
had to go through what he went through. If he did not go through what he went through, he would not have left the impact that he left, and the message would not have been as strong. If you could have taken the average person who decided that they couldn't face themselves, couldn't deal with what there was, couldn't get the message out, couldn't communicate, and they left the planet, nobody would pay attention.
Right.
But if you take a look at what he did, what he represented, who he was, and then the spirituality comes out, that's almost a plan. That's what it was. It had to be a plan.
I agree with you 100%. It was a premeditated plan. That's what I mean by it was just time for him to go. Elvis did what he did. Like you said, he was given tremendous gifts. He shared those gifts within the structure of his music and his silly but successful movies. And it was his time for him to go, and it was unfortunate that he lost him. But I'm with you. People say to me all the time, the number one question, is Elvis alive? His spirit obviously dwells on. 34 years after his death, we're having this interview. I mean, that's an incredible testimony and legacy to an individual like Elvis Presley.
No, and absolutely, and when we talk about time is meaningless, obviously, when we get away from the realm that we're in right now. So 34 years is nothing. Blink your eyes, it was 10 seconds ago.
Right.
In essence, we had to get to where we are to truly be able to get that message. If you're not going through confusion, if you're not going through any pain in any way, shape, or form, you're not going to resonate, you're not going to recognize the message. But if you get into, just turn a television on today and look at the news. So the timing is absolutely perfect. So you got to get out there and you got to get the message out, because you truly could save some lives.
Well, that's the objective. You know, if one person will step into the authenticity and embrace the greatness of the authentic self, then I feel like that the book is worth it. You know, I'm a messenger. You know, I've written books about my life with Elvis. I've had bestsellers talking about the iconic superstar and big brother that he was. But all these years I've had this message and decided to put it within the structure of a book. And the book will be out December of this year. It'll go worldwide. And, you know, you said something interesting. If he was an average Joe, his platform might not have been as big. Well, because I was in relation to Elvis Presley, spent 17 years with him as his little brother, young apprentice, whatever you want to call me. Many, many years, many tours from 72 to 77. I did over 800 concerts with Elvis because I walked in history. I can perpetuate history and have a platform to communicate the message within the structure of Conversations with the King, Journals of a Young Apprentice. So, you know, it's coming. The time is now. I appreciate what you said. People weren't ready maybe in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. But I think we're in a shift now. I think a lot of things are changing. And I think authenticity and stepping into it is the key to where we are now, and encourage everyone to do so.
Wonderful. Hey, David, we're running out of time. Website we can find you at?
I'm at www.davidestanley.com. The book is a pre-sale order now, exclusive limited edition, signed and sealed by the authors, are made available now. They'll be out in December. Again, www.davidestanley.com.
You know what you should do with this? We're going to get out of here in about 15, 20 seconds. Okay. You should create groups. You should create somewhere where you can track the power and the value and how that message affected this country and, as a matter of fact, affected the world. David, we got to go. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care. Good night.
Right. Bye-bye.
There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris, and Venice. Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see. Come and sing a simple song of freedom. Sing it like you've never sung before. Let it fill the air. Tell the people everywhere. We the people here don't want a war. Hey there, Mr. Black Man, can you hear me? I don't want your diamonds or your game.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Sophie Blackmall is with us. She's the author of Misconnections, Love, Lost, and Found. She's illustrated over 20 books for children, including the Ezra Jack Keats Award-winning Ruby's Wish, Meet Wild Boars, which won her a Founders Award from the Society of Illustrators, the Ivy and Bean series, and so much more. Her editorial illustrations have appeared in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and many, many, many other magazines. And let us say, Sophie, hi. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. Missed Connections, Love, Lost, and Found. Elizabeth Gilbert said it was beautiful, it was wistful, and it was fantastic. The impetus of the story, what was it that triggered you to put this to pen?
Well, I, as you mentioned, I illustrate children's books for the most part, but I'd been wanting to do something a little more grown up, you know, just for myself. and I couldn't quite figure out what that would be. And then one day I was on the subway in the morning in New York, and it was crowded as it usually is, and it was that kind of crush where you're not quite sure where your limbs end and the next person's begin. And there was a very handsome fellow next to me, and he stopped at a station, got off, and he came around to the window and looked directly at me and mouthed two words, and I had no idea what he was saying. And I turned to the person next to me, who was a stranger, and said, "Well, what did he say?" And she said, "Missed connections. Check missed connections." And she was really cool, so I didn't want to say, "Oh, what's that?" But I had no idea, but I made a mental note and rushed home and Googled it. And then I think I lost like 2 hours just reading these stories of people's encounters with other strangers where they shared a little moment of connection and then for whatever reason didn't have the courage or the time or whatever to actually, you know, make contact. And then filled with regret, they posted these little messages on Craigslist or anywhere else for us to find and read and hopefully the actual person to find. But for me, it was like a glimpse into these little stories, these little tiny moments in people's lives. And I just saw them as pictures. And so that was like, oh, that's it. That's what I want to draw.
You know what? But the picture I had in my mind when you said that, Judy Garland on the trolley. Do you remember the trolley song?
Right, yes.
Exactly. They held hands for the rest of the life. Yeah, absolutely. There are so many misconnections because it's either that's something that somebody's afraid to say something, and the guy on the other side of the window, you may never see him again in your entire life, but look what he triggered.
That's right. And, you know, and funny you should say that because I never actually remembered to look for him in the messages. And I wasn't really interested in, you know, anyway in that kind of I'm in a relationship. So it wasn't that. But I just got so distracted and then started making these pictures and put them on a blog. And then just in the way that the internet works, people found it, which is still extraordinary to me because I didn't actually tell anybody. But within, you know, weeks of posting these pictures based on these true anonymous stories, I had emails coming in from Greece and Argentina and South Africa and even Iran and all sorts of places that, you know, people had found this just because it's up there on the internet.
Okay. Now, by the way, this obviously could be just a beginning of it. How much of this could you do? You could have probably filled up volumes of books with this.
Well, that's right. But then at some point, I mean, I didn't set out to make it a book, but at some point publishers started to see it, and then I was in that kind of dreamy position of having, you know, people say, let's make this into a book, and so we did, and it's just come out this week, and I couldn't be more excited. It's really lovely to know that it's going to go out to even more people, and it's a lovely kind of physical object as well. I'm still a great believer in books.
Well, I like the girl sleeping on the train. You were the gorgeous brunette sleeping on the train. I was the guy sitting next to you. I just wanted to apologize for my repeated lack of consciousness under your shoulder. We both got off at Flatbush. Hit me back if you think this is you.
Yeah, there are so many that are just really sweet, and they're not all romantic either. You know, sometimes it's somebody just reaching out to a stranger to thank them for some little moment of kindness in a busy day. You know, it's like you held the door open for me when I was carrying too many packages, or you know, you gave me a swipe of your Metro card when I realized I couldn't find mine, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, these kind of little things that hopefully we still do for each other, and you don't expect thanks, but it's, you know, that it's nice to send these messages out into the ether, and maybe the other person sees them, but if at the very least other people read them and then, you know, maybe are inspired to make a little kindness towards a stranger in their day.
There's something else too here. Page 6667, you noticed I've memorized the entire thing now. It's the one that says, and there's a message behind this one also. It says, how come no one ever misses me? And there's
that
the picture
one.
Of nine faces, right?
Right.
Once
that one
happens,
just killed me.
That exposure is phenomenal
right.
for that person who doesn't get seen.
Right. So I mean, that was just sort of heartbreaking, you know, and just in those, what, six words, if you count a hyphenated word as one, we'll say it's six words, that is just sort of this loneliness and, you know, desire to be loved and all of this in this one little, you know, sentence. And I don't know, that one really, really killed me.
Yeah, and by the way, tattoos are an expression of identity, because most people run through this life and they just don't have an identity. Sophie, they get lost and nobody recognizes them. And you know where I'm going? I'm going to the throat tattoo.
Right.
Hey guy on the First Avenue Hey guy that got on First Avenue dressed all in black with a throat tattoo. Thanks for existing. Somebody's
right.
Acknowledging their presence.
And exactly, and it's not even, we don't know if that's a man or a woman writing. It's just, you know, hey, for whatever reason, I thought you were great, and I just want to say thanks for existing. I don't know. I think that would make my day if I read that.
The laundry room is great.
Yes.
The Greenpoint laundromat.
Right. This is a guy who kind of decided to take matters into his own hands, and he said, I am going to be at this laundromat in half an hour. And so he's kind of, in a way, he's like making a blind date with the world. You know, anyone who might come, you know, perhaps you'll be there doing your laundry as well. And quite, I don't know, it's a fascinating.
Yeah, I'm a nice, quiet guy, and I'm about to have a missed connection with someone at my local laundromat when I go in about a half hour to do my laundry. He's been misconnecting. He knows he's going to misconnect. And hopefully if somebody sees it, they'll stop and talk to him. I'll probably
And then hopefully there will be a connection, because the person will say, hey, are you that guy? It's such an interesting kind of thing. And then funny that you were just mentioning the tattoos. I just read today that there was somebody who was described in a misconnection. I saw you at, it was at a baseball game, and, you know, you were wearing this and you had a very distinctive tattoo. And the woman wrote back, and she was not pleased to be described, because she had taken a day off sick from work and told her boss she was at home and had gone to the baseball game, not knowing that she would be seen by someone, some admirer, and this would be posted on Craigslist, and that her boss was a Craigslist misconnections addict. And so first thing in the next day, reads a message and recognizes her employee, who was not sick after all. So she was kind of livid. So sometimes they have an ulterior kind of consequence, which is pretty funny.
Oh, I love this one. Chinese food in Queens. I met you in a Chinese restaurant near Juniper Park. You ordered General Tso's chicken, and we talked about horseback riding briefly. I thought you were cute. You know, and realistically, that, you know, it's misconnections. There's so many people with just the millisecond, that second in time of if they would have done this, if they would have said that, and their entire life would have changed, and they missed the connection.
Exactly. That's exactly right. But then sometimes, you know, it's that thing of love at first sight, that, you know, you can then fill in the rest of the story yourself. And that's certainly what I'm doing with these images. I'm just taking a fragment, and then I'm just kind of imagining the rest of the story. There's something wonderful about that, you know, because sometimes you don't need to have the whole ending. And it's kind of enough just to have those little moments in your day where you connect with a stranger for a second and then go your separate ways, but maybe it kind of stays with you in some ways, and it certainly makes you feel more alive, I think.
Well, sure. And take a look at what happened with you and the guy at the on the train station when he said missed connections.
Right.
Two things occurred. One, when you went home with the relationship that you're in, if he's there, he's not there, whatever, you could have said, thank you to this guy who said that, because then you would make sure that you wouldn't misconnect with the person you're in the relationship with.
Right. Yeah, there's that too. But it's always nice, you know, I think we're all so busy and we rush through our lives, and it's quite a nice thing to feel for a moment that somebody might, in this great rush, that they might stop and notice a tiny detail that, you know, that you stuck a flower in your hair that morning, or that you might see the man across from you is using a paper plane as a bookmark in the novel he's reading, or some other sort of tiny detail that you stop and think about the other person, that all that stuff is not invisible, that somebody notices, and that's pretty great, I think.
So, Sophie, and I really believe, and I will do this always, and I will do this for the rest of my life, always stop and help somebody put groceries in the back of their trunk if they're having a trouble walking around. Always help somebody reach something higher than they are if they can't get to it. And you know what? I don't do it for them. I do it for me because I feel better about it when it's done. And it helps them.
And in the same way, kind of giving a compliment is so easy, and it doesn't have to be. I think some people are afraid it will sound creepy or something, but especially if I see a woman wearing a fantastic hat, you know, I'll just, as you walk past, great hat, and it's so nice. You know, we should say those things to each other.
No question about it. I really believe so. We're starting to run out of time. Website we can find you at?
You can find me at the www.missedconnectionsny.blogspot.com, and the book is called Missed Connections, Love, Lost, and Found, and is available today and tomorrow. It came out today in all great bookstores.
Okay, and right before we leave, I've got two words to say to you. You ready?
Goodness, yes.
Nice show.
Thanks a lot. It's been lovely to talk to you.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.
We'll warm the winter night. That's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these.
Some folks really were, and those folks are always humble, and they were extremely compassionate and kind. And if I was going to take one word, that they were kind. That was the overarching quality that they all had.
That theme, you know. Interesting. I'm looking at your press release, and you know, it's so true. You know, we live in such a world that desperately needs some kind of a change. You know, this one hates that one hates this one, and it's you know, this one's fault, and so on and so forth. And I've watched what's gone on in our country in the last 3-4 years. That the separation, the division of you know, the ethnicity, the gender, the whatever, nobody seems to be on the same page anymore, and everybody is searching for that something called identity. And whether it's spiritual, whatever the case may be, we end up flocking to that. And most people are so busy that they just don't take the time to realize that the answers that they want are going to come internally, not externally.
Another reason for writing the book was that I'm a psychologist, and I've done a lot, as my press release states, I've done a lot of work in stress management. And what I found is that an awful lot of people really don't understand what's going on around them. And I'm not pretending to be any kind of genius, but because of my training and the courses I've taken and the people I've met, I thought, wouldn't it be neat to help people to awaken a little bit so that when something's in front of them that they're not seeing, that I can show them it. And what's been fun is I did that in the form of a novel because I've been into the self-help field for a long time. And when you learn the 5 ways to do this or the 10 ways to do that, after you read them, it's boring. So I decided, let me put this together in a novel form with characters that people can identify with and care about. I even put in a little love story in the self-help book, and it keeps people turning the pages who've never read a book. So that's kind of fun.
Well, what I think is one of the great things about the way that you've done it, if you go all the way back to the original Star Trek, and I think the greatest example for me was there was a fellow by, I don't know if he's even alive anymore, but there was a character actor by the name of Frank Gorshin, and he was starring on one of the series. It was the original one with Kirk and Spock and the rest of them. And he came on the starship, and he's excited, and he's frightened to death, and he's, the left side of his body is black, the right side of his body is white. And what's he running from? Well, they're going to get him from his plant. They want to kill him because he's different, because they're black and white on the reverse side. And what they did was they took a situation, a condition, a problem that we face culturally today, framed it in such a way that it wasn't you making the decision what's good or bad or who's black or white or who's the best and whatever, but you got to see it away from you, and you get to recognize your own problems or the cultural problems, and you got to make the decision of how stupid it was. And at the same time, if you had to be asked individually face-to-face, you got to be careful of how you create your answer because of what somebody's going to see, feel, or experience. So I think in a novel setting is wonderful because you can look outside of yourself, see it through a third-party experience, and then make your decision from there.
You sound like you read the book because that's exactly what I tried to do, and make it non-threatening so that the things that are happening to someone else, but you're getting the benefit of it.
Yeah, yeah, and we live, you know, vicariously through other people.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's been fun. It's been a great ride, Michael. This is the first of three, by the way, and there'll be another one that I'm halfway through almost, and that will be the gifted one on the road, and the final one will be the gifted one coming home. So I'm having a great time.
No, and by the way, I think with the books, if you get something like what you're talking about, as you're speaking, I'm visualizing, I'm getting a grasp of what it is that you're doing. But when you get a book like that and people recognize themselves, and you just said it a moment ago, helping people see what they don't see. It's good sometimes to have somebody look over your shoulder, and they'll see what it is that's right in front of you that you don't see. And a book like that, when it has, it's about people, it's about you, it's about me, it's about everybody and the problems that we end up facing. The book is not a book, it's alive. And I would venture to guess that if somebody picked it up and read it and then reread it, they'd get something different and then reread it again. And each time there's another dimension of what it is that you're, of the subject matter, that it's got to keep going and growing as you get into it and read it. Because if I read it, and it brings me to a certain level, now I have a different understanding, and based on that understanding, I reread it again, and then I expand.
Yeah, the nicely said. And in addition to that, one of the things that happens with us guys, maybe not someone like yourself because of your business, but you know, you've all heard that men are from Mars and women are from Venus, and we don't understand each other. And well, this is what I tried to do in the book also, is kind of make both men and women understand each other a little bit better, yeah, and let them see how the other people are thinking, because the language is very different, and we're never taught any of this stuff in school. And as a matter of fact, that's probably another overarching thing with the book. I tried to take 12 really relevant concepts to the times, to right now, and talk about them and give people insights that we don't get in school. And as a matter of fact, most people don't know a lot of what's in the book. Many professionals don't know what's in the book. Some do, some of course do. But the end result of meeting with all these people and taking all these courses is that it allowed me to put something together that, from what they're telling me, hasn't been done before. A self-help book in the form of a novel. And that's kind of cool. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Now, by the way, I understood women all my life until we hit a certain cultural level, and then I got told that I didn't. And if I took certain courses, I would finally be able to understand. And I think there's where some confusion is, too. There's the men are from Mars, the women are from whatever it is. It gets to a point whereby, you know, we get told, and the people that are writing the book, for the most part, have no idea what it is they're dealing with. They've been kicked in the rear end most of their life, and now they're going to come back and give you, you know, their perspective on something. And I think that's what you were talking about, those that don't know, and then some that do know. And it gets very confusing about who was who. I believe in my heart of hearts that I have a sister who's a few years younger than I am. If we would have been brought up genderless, me as a man, she as a woman, but just genderless. And my mom treated us the same. We had the exact same friends. We went to the same places. Behavior, I believe that we would have turned out very much alike.
Yeah. There's that's kind of an interesting concept. What role does parenting play, and for boys and girls and expectations and all that kind of thing? And
sure.
Part of my intent also, and again, sounds like I have lots of intents, but I do, is that I'm hoping that for Christmas or the birthday or for whatever, that women will buy this book not just for their friends, but especially for their boyfriend, their husband, their father. And I wrote it kind of, I tried to do it in a manly way. Not that it's, you know, there's an unmanly way to write, but I tried to do it in a way that even a construction worker who may not be a reader could say, that wasn't bad, I got something out of that. So what's not flowery, it's very blue collar.
And by the way, I hear you loud and clear.
Everybody.
And I think one of the biggest problems that we have today, Andy, bar none, the biggest problems is we're told what to think, how to say things, because if you don't, there's consequences and this is going to happen and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
I still think John Wayne should be the president, and I will never change my mind.
Yeah.
Radio Susie just rolled her eyes at me.
Michael, there's a wonderful point on that I'd like to make, and, if my father, who passed away many years ago, if he read the book, I think he'd like it. He was a pipe fitter, and John Wayne was his main guy.
My kind of guy.
The point I want to make is this, is that right now what's happening in our world and in our cities and our states and in the United States and the world is folks have stopped taking responsibility. Not everyone, certainly not everyone. But enough folks have stopped taking responsibility, and they don't say, well, it's my fault that this happened. And I'll give you just a quick for instance. Most of my life, I've worked with kids that have severe behavior disorders. And almost always, it involves, certainly there are genetics involved, but especially the gang kids, almost always it's a lack of a family, lack of a dad who cares about them or who even admits that it's his child. When you don't take responsibility, what happens is that people feel unloved and they don't feel worthy, and then they look for a family in gangs, which is what happens. Then you take that to the cities where we had politicians who stole and did horrible things. You take it to the state, the same thing happened where, you know, I know in New Jersey, our Social Security and pensions and what happened to everything? Where did it all go? And of course, what happened is politicians did things that we didn't know about, and they didn't take responsibility by telling folks. Now it's happening in our federal government, where, as I mentioned, the Democrats hate the Republicans, and nobody wants to talk, and it's not good.
No, not at all. And let me give you my first time I've done this on the air, my real definition of John Wayne, all right? Not the be-all, end-all man, but in the world of John Wayne, I was probably raised at the time your dad was raised. And in those days, you went to the movies, and the good guy shot the gun out of the bad guy's hands. If there was a bedroom scene that was 1 foot on the floor, that was the law, Doris Day, and so on and so forth. See, in those days, people, for the most part, were responsible. They didn't have what we have today and the availability of drugs. And when I say guns, I own guns, but that putting them in the hands of kids that are going to go out and shoot somebody, look at all the lockdowns that they're having today. It was a different era, and it was a different time. You hit the nail on the head when you said it. If I'm not accepted at home, accepted is the big word here. I want to be accepted. I want identity. And if you're not going to give me identity at home, I'm going to go out and find it someplace else. And that's what's happening. Look at the percentages of dropouts in the schools today. It's not money to drop into an educational system. It's giving those kids the value for being in school is senior to the value for being out in the street and being in a gang or whatever the case may be. We are in a valueless society, and or the values are pointed in directions that aren't constructive. And if we're not careful, we're going to fall down.
Well, I think we already have, Michael, and if I can just add on to what you had just said, that, you know, I think it's really important for folks to feel accepted, you know, regardless of how bright they are or what race or color or sexual orientation. Mm. And they need to, but at the same time, they need to feel competent. And as an educator, I've been a college professor now for 11 years. One of the things that I talk to my students about all the time is that if boys especially would rather be bad than stupid. And so they'll act, if they don't feel competent, they'll act out and they'll cause difficulty, cause problems. And almost every kid I've ever worked with, and I've worked with thousands, every one of them underneath wants to be competent. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, and if they can't be competent in school, they'll be the best car thief or the best whatever. And they'll tell you, I'm the best car thief in Union City or someplace. And it's, again, this need to be competent. We need to feel competent because with competency means we're worthy, and that means we're worthy of love. And we all want to be worthy of love. And so the book addresses this kind of stuff as well, and having to do with responsibility. And schools don't look at that. You know, you can be great in all the subjects, but lousy in math. And, you know, gee, it's too bad you're so stupid in math. And, well, you may be a brilliant orator or brilliant scientist, but just not a math person. So I know you get what I'm talking about, but
sure.
You know, the message is that, as we started out, by the way, everybody has a gift, and I wish that in education we tried more to find the gifts rather than the areas that need assistance.
Absolutely. Andy, we're just about out of time, but I want to end it with this, that we talk about acceptance, we talk about identity. Adolf Hitler, right before the Second World War and leading into the Second World War, did that with I'm not going to say the German population, but the Nazi population. What he did, he took a country that was going through some economic, really hard times. They weren't quite sure who they were. They were very confused, if that doesn't sound familiar. And what he did was he slapped uniforms on and gave them armbands, and now they had identity, and they killed for that identity. That's where the problem is. It's a prime example.
Yeah. Michael, as you know in my bio there, I do a lot of public speaking and that kind of thing. And is there a way if folks would like to contact me that we could do that?
Oh, please, your website.
The website, or they can email me at dramccabe@hotmail.com. D as in David, R as in Robert, A as in Apple, mccabe@hotmail.com. And this was great fun. Anything else, Michael?
No, we're good to go. We're just about out of time. And if anybody missed it, Andy, it'll be up on our website for them to catch.
Very cool.
And by the way,
you're a great interviewer.
Thank you. And thank you so much for being here tonight. Take care.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Good night.
I'll go my way by myself. This is the end of romance. I'm gonna go my way by myself. Love is only a dance. I'll try to apply myself, teach my heart how to sing. Yeah, you can bet I'll go my way by myself, like a bird on the wing. I'll face the unknown. I'll build a world all my own. Then nobody knows better than I myself. I'm by myself.
myself alone when you're alone. Who cares for starlit skies when you're alone? Magic moonlight dies at break of dawn. There is no sunrise when your lover has gone. What lonely hours all evening.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Nina Mirror's back. We're talking writing books, how to write a book, blogging, and you name it, why authors need to blog. And she is here. And Nina, hi.
Ray?
Hi. That was the intro. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, and by the way, no, let me do it this way. Watch this. Watch this. Susie, watch this. This is good. Watch this. Wait, listen to the music. Would you like to dance? I love that music coming in. How are you, Nina?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Are you in New York?
I'm not in New York. That's next week.
Ah, what's in New York?
What's in New York? My son and my daughter. And my son has a performance, so we're going to New York to see it.
Oh, what is he? He dances.
He's a dancer.
Oh, when is he going to? Susie's over here yelling at me. He's that dancer. Yes, she's excited. Oh,
I have that other blog about dance.
When is he going to be on Dancing with the Stars?
He doesn't do that kind of dance.
Oh, what kind of dance?
He's doing ballet. He's at the School of American Ballet
really?
Now.
Oh, man.
He's hoping to one day be a professional ballet dancer.
I'll bet he's in condition.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to mess with him. No, he's doing weightlifting a couple times a week, and he lifts girls. He's quite buff, as he likes to say.
Yeah, but when you really come down to it, when you talk ballet, look at the physical condition and also the mental discipline you have to go through to do that.
Yeah, it's actually pretty amazing. People don't realize how difficult it is and how strong ballet dancers are. There's this guy that we know. He's a ballet dancer for the San Francisco Ballet. And he was on the subway in San Francisco, and some guy tried to steal his iPhone. Boy, was he sorry.
Yeah.
And he's a little guy. I mean, he's not a big man. He's a fairly short ballet dancer, and he knocked this guy out when he tried to take his iPhone.
No, absolutely. If you can imagine just the 3 or 4 or 5 minutes that maybe somebody is doing some kind of a centered dancing, what they go through and the jumps and the moves and the lifting that they do, you bet they got to be in condition.
It's enormously difficult. These guys are so strong, really strong. I mean, just it's amazing. I interview a lot of dancers, and, you know, they if you look at a really great male dancer on stage, one of these guys who gets up there wearing next to nothing, they look like bodybuilders.
Yeah, that's true.
They're beautiful.
Yeah, I once watched Radio Susie get dropped on her head. You can hear. I'm serious. You could hear the thud through the entire room. But somebody lifted her. They were dancing, and they did one of these really big lifts. And when he dropped her, he went down too far, and you could thud.
I shouldn't be laughing. Does Radio Susie like to do ballroom dancing? Is that what she does?
Big time ballroom dancer. Oh, she had lots of experience in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, she's impressed. Yeah. And her head is still sore. But yeah, I saw that and I said, this is not for me. I'll sit back here and do the good stuff. Okay, let's go to Author's Platform, which I think is really good. One big question, what's the one thing that every nonfiction author and arguably every fiction author needs if they want to get published? What is it?
It's an author's platform.
Aha.
That is exactly what they need. They need an author's platform.
Okay, comes the next question. You know it's coming. What is it?
What is an author's platform? Well, I like to describe it as a built-in readership, but it really, you know, you have to talk about what makes up
an author's platform. But an author's platform is who knows you and who's going to run out and buy your book once it comes out. So it's your fan base, really. And, you know, that's how I describe it. It's your fan base. You know, who's going to buy your book? Who knows who you are?
Well, but that's a very important question. Who knows who you are? And that is a major step for most people that are in front of any kind of an audience. If they don't know who you are.
I'll go my way by myself. This is the end of romance. I'm gonna go my way by myself. Love is only a dance. I'll try to apply myself. Teach my heart.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Susie. What is it?
Dark?
Dresser After Dark.
I'll go my way by myself, like a bird on the wing.
Dr. Mayor Eisenstein back with us. He is the author of Don't Vaccinate Before You Educate. He's the CEO of Home First Natural Pharmaceuticals. Mayor, welcome back.
Oh, welcome, Michael. It's a pleasure to be back, you know, and I had kind of a busy week. I'm still here in Florida, and I visited four doctors who are interested in our HCG program, and I've had just a great time. I've been traveling through Florida, you know, a couple of doctors have been with us already, had some amazing results, just a continuation of the work that we've been doing. Patients lost 60, 70, 80 pounds and are maintaining it, you know. And the most interesting thing is one of the doctors I visited is a plastic surgeon. He was born in Israel. He fought in every war except the first two wars. He fought in the 67 war, the 76 war, the Lebanon, you know, became a plastic surgeon in between, came to America, you know, and so we were talking about Maimonides and his work on nutrition. And it's so interesting because, you know, we kind of think that, oh, we've learned new things the last couple of years. Well, we're talking about hundreds of years ago. Maimonides, the Jewish scholar and rabbi and doctor, who's the doctor of the Sultan in Egypt. And what he, some of the aphorisms that he said are ones we think we came up with today. One of them he said, you should take no pill or drug for any medical condition until you've resolved it nutritionally.
And by the way, that makes all the sense in the world because it all, you know, I've talked about this time and time and time again. What we're really dealing with is the effect of your food, which is your nutrition, on your body. It turns the chemical. The chemical changes the good or the bad, which has to do with if your body's going to work or not work. And it all started out with food.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's the old saying that Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine and let thy medicine be your food. And it sounds so simple and so simplistic, you know. And it's really hard because all of us, for the most part, have gotten away from that. You know, and I think it's partly because we are blessed to be a land of abundance, you know, and really we have so much in this country. I mean, and so what it's caused by that is that it used to be that food was only available in abundance during celebrations because we had to essentially we didn't have it available. And now all of a sudden it's become almost every day we have food in abundance. And it's a problem. It's a serious problem, you know. And I think we have to essentially retrain ourselves that we're only supposed to eat when we're hungry. It sounds so simple. And I know, Michael, unfortunately, you don't understand this. I mean, this goes beyond your understanding. Because you can only talk the talk. Unfortunately, you can't walk the walk.
What I've been doing for years is I've been listening to everything that you've said, and I've reversed it. So I can gain weight.
How have you reversed it?
So I can gain weight.
So you gain weight. Right, exactly. You suffer from the problem that all of us would, well I'm not sure we'd like this but clearly the opposite, you know. So I've been seeing doctors here in Florida, but I tell you the one thing that's really, and we got to talk about this over and over again, none of them knew about that even in Florida, the majority of their patients are vitamin D deficient. And I said, of course it makes sense. They're not sitting out in the sun every day. They're working, you know, and so as they've been testing their patients, they said, oh my God, every one of their patients for the most part is severely vitamin D deficient.
Well, let me hold you up for a minute because I've noticed something very interesting there. Because now all of a sudden, and you and I talked about this within the last couple of months, we started talking about vitamin D, vitamin D3, I don't know how many years ago now. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing all these ads, vitamin D, vitamin D3, it's in here, you've got to have it there, and whatever. But you know the big difference, besides quality, the price of some of this stuff, vitamin D should be very inexpensive. You know, when I get mine from you, it doesn't cost hardly anything. But if you go out on the open market, man, that stuff can get expensive.
Yeah, I mean it's exactly right. You know, I mean, and you know, you've got to look at two ways of expense. You've got to look at quantity. So if you're buying a 400 unit vitamin D, which is a tenth of what you need every day, minimum a 20th, you know, you've got to look at it by the amount you're buying also. I mean, you want to buy at least a 5,000, you have to compare the amount. I mean, and the amount, the size of the tablet won't look any different, or the capsule, because it's such a small molecule, but it's clearly extremely important, you know. Vitamin D, and as I like to say, and more vitamin D, and Michael, you always tell people which one to buy.
Vitamin D3.
You've got it. Excellent. This is we're a great duo. You know, I think that's extremely important because, you know, you know, Dr. John Cannell is a psychiatrist, but for many years he was also a family practice doctor, and he's gotten heavily involved with vitamin D, and he has a great website. It's called vitamindcouncil.org. It's vitamin D Council, just the way it sounds, .org. And he, just today or yesterday, he had a newsletter on three cases of toxicity. That's all he could find in all the literature over the last 10 years. And one was a case where the manufacturer made a mistake in how they made it, and instead of having 1,000 units it was in a powder per teaspoon, it was 1,000,000, and they recommended taking 2 teaspoons a day. So the person was taking 2,000,000 units a day, and they were taking this for 6 months, and they started getting a little bit listless, lethargic, and they test their level, and it was in the hundreds and hundreds, like 700, 800. Here was the most impressive thing. A week or two off of the high doses of vitamin D, and they were perfectly fine again. Now, that's not an argument to take 2,000,000 a day. I mean, I recommend 10,000. I mean, it takes a whole lot of pills to get from 10,000 to 2,000,000, you know. Think of it in terms of cash. If you earn $10,000 a year as opposed to earning $2 million a year, that's kind of a little bit of a difference, you know. And the other two cases were very rare cases of people who were also taking way more. They didn't know what they were taking, you know, for all practicality. And they were all unhealthy people to start with. I mean, they had other medical conditions. So really the takeaway message from that is there's virtually no side effects to vitamin D. I think that's the takeaway message.
Okay, can we move away from vitamin D for a minute? There is something I want to talk to you about. Because I want to talk about prostate cancer for a moment. Every man is going to get it before they die. And they may not get it until they're 90 years old or 3 years before they die. But it's inherent and it happens within men. And I got a product from you that I started taking probably 3 weeks ago because I saw it and I thought, oh, you know what? At the age I am, 14, at the age I am now, that I better start taking a look at some of this stuff. And I picked up the prostate support that supplement to support the prostate health. And I looked at some of the things in there. And one of the strongest things that I see, besides the lycopene and the stinging nettle, et cetera, was the saw palmetto. And research after research indicates that that's the essentials for when you're dealing with any kind of prostate health. So my feeling, and by the way, there's pumpkin seed oil in there, there's vitamin B6, there's zinc. But the most important thing is this, that men, as we grow older, this is going to happen to us. And there's no reason why we can't start to fight it, ward it off before it happens. And I am a very strong advocate and a proponent of preventative medicine or preventative supplements.
You are so 100% right. You know, I mean, and I'm going to add one more. All the ingredients that we have in there have scientific evidence to help. There's no question about that. You know, I mean, and there's one more thing also, and I think I've written about this, and I'm going to send you, and that is progesterone cream. You know, we know that a large part of the let's go one step before prostate cancer, because that's not as common as something even more, and that's enlarged prostate. And most men who have enlarged prostate, everyone will end up with enlarged prostate for the most part. Yeah. You know, and some of those enlarged prostates will become cancerous, you know. But what's very interesting is that most of the enlarged prostate is caused by too much estrogen in our system. And where does the estrogen come from in men? Well, all the fat cells produce estrogen. So if you lower your fat cells, you lower your estrogen. But some people have it without that. And then there's a real simple treatment, and it's a progesterone cream. Inexpensive, you know, and what it does is it's the antagonist to estrogen. And what it does is, if you keep it simple, estrogen causes things to grow. Progesterone causes things to shrink. And so a large number of men, over 50 especially, who have enlarged prostate. How do you know if you have enlarged prostate? One of the first signs is you have difficulty urinating, or the stream doesn't go real well, or you have to stand there for a minute or two before anything comes out. So which means the prostate's pushing on the urethra and making it, you know, difficult to like putting pressure on a hose, you know, and the combination of our prostate support and our progesterone cream will essentially it'll cause the prostate to shrink, and vitamin D has had strong studies showing that that's going to be extremely effective in enlarged prostate and prostate cancer.
Yeah. Now, by the way, the natural the progesterone cream that there's men and also for women. But one of the things that I've taken, and I've got the combination of the both right now, because when you really look at it, you're looking at there's symptoms of a benign enlarged prostate, and most people
right,
don't get
right,
weak
right.
urinary system, dribbling urine, the need to urinate frequently, the need to urinate 3-4 times at night. I mean, this goes on and on. Painful urination, painful ejaculation, impotence, lowered sex drive, and all of these things are part and parcel of the symptoms of that enlarged prostate. It's a benign one. And if you have the natural processes to be able to fight this stuff in advance, why not?
Well, you're not kidding. Exactly. And there's so many, you know, the whole study of the field of natural treatments, you know, is so incredible because, I use the word nutraceutical. And nutraceutical is a... It's a word that, and I'm going to give you the exact definition because this is really, real valuable. I'm going to look it up right here real quickly because I want to, I'll find it here in 1 second. I won't find it in 1 second. You know, I'll give you a paraphrase of the word. It's using, nutrition, using food as for medicinal purposes. And that's everything that you mentioned. All the ingredients you mentioned are found in tomatoes. Lycopene is found in tomatoes. Everything is found in food. It's real. It's absolutely real, you know. And I think that's the thing that I've been interested in, is trying to find in the literature all the different things that can help in conditions that we have in our life that can make that essentially give food for, going back to what Maimonides said hundreds of years ago and what Hippocrates said thousands, let food be thy medicine.
Sure. And by the way, this is not just for men. There's a progesterone cream for women, and what you're dealing with here is the symptoms of PMS. The premenstrual, the menopause.
Exactly right. Boy, let me tell you, it's such a simple, inexpensive treatment, and it works more. So any woman who's got premenopausal or menopausal issues, small amounts of progesterone cream will more than 90% of the time relieve and resolve all of their symptoms. Absolutely incredible. Simple, works real well, and it's very exciting. Very, very, you know, you don't require any fancy or special test. You know, Dr. Lee, the late Dr. Lee, talked about this, and I was privileged to have met him before he passed away. It was about 7, 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And he said to me, it's the first try. And what do you do? You take either a little bit more or a little bit less. If it doesn't work, then you got to send them to a specialist. But short of that, you know, he said more than 90% of women will be helped with their premenopausal and menopausal issues just with the bioidentical progesterone cream.
You're talking about rosacea, and this is the one I love. How about fat gain, especially around the abdomen, the hips, the thighs? It helps with that also.
Yeah, exactly. What it does is something changes. I think it's the same thing in men, but it's more noticeable in women. Not more noticeable. Women are more conscious of that. The men's prostate enlarge because of too much estrogen. Now, we're talking about the majority of time. There are other reasons, but this is one of the main reasons for it. And in women, they start getting increased fat deposits in their abdomen. Remember, estrogen makes things grow. Progesterone makes them shrink. And we have an abundance of estrogen in our society. And so where does it come from? Oh, my God. I wrote a whole book on that. One of the things, the exhaust from cars has estrogen-like properties. And all of us are breathing in. Just using one little example of where we have so much, it's called xenoestrogens. These are not estrogen-looking like molecules, but they aren't estrogen, which make the body react as if it's estrogen.
Now, by the way, I got it loud and clear. We're just about out of time. Where can we buy all of this?
Let me tell you, you can go to homefirst.com. That's HOMEFIRST.com. Just click on the store, and I got tons of stuff written about it.
Wonderful. And I think it's all very critical and very important. Mayor, again, the website one more time.
Homefirst.com. That's HOMEFIRST.com. Thank you,
Mayor,
my dear friend.
Thank you so much.
Well.
See you next
week.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, bye.
Where are you? With a love oh so true, and a hand that I can hold to feel you near as I grow old, because I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Someday, I don't know how, I hope that she'll hear my plea. Some way, I don't know how, she'll bring her love to me. Dream lover, until then, I'll go to sleep and dream again. That's the only thing to do, till all my lover's dreams come true. Because I want a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Dream lover, until then, I'll go to sleep and dream again. That's the only thing to do, till all my lover's dreams come true. Because I want
a girl to call my own. I want a dream lover so I don't have to dream alone. Please don't make me dream alone. I beg you, don't you make me dream alone. No, 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 I don't want to dream alone. Come on, my darling.
Splish splash, I was taking a bath, long about a Saturday night. Yeah! Rubbed up, just relaxing in the tub, I'm thinking everything was alright. Well, I stepped out the tub, I put my feet on the floor, I wrapped the towel around me and I opened the door. And then a splish splash, I jumped back in the bath. Well, how was I to know there was a party going on? There was a splashing and a splashing, reeling with the feeling, moving and a grooving, rocking and a rolling.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You are listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
Bing bang, I saw the whole
David Friedlander with us. He is the author of The 12 Keys, How to Unlock Your Full Potential and Live the Life of Your Dreams. He's an author, he's an entrepreneur, an adventurer, motivating and inspiring, teaching others how to eliminate fear, anxiety, and doubt in order to replace those things with hope, love, and confidence, and the precise tools that we can all use to live our lives the best right now. And let us say, David, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael Ray. Glad to be on.
Oh, and thank you so much for being here. David, let's take you back to 2006, Hurricane Katrina. Something happened to you. You were living a particular life, but it happened then. What occurred?
Well, good question. Let's see. I had been living in Los Angeles prior to the hurricane, working in construction. And when the storm happened, I just had a strong feeling that I should move to, that I should go there and check it out at least, and participate in the rebuilding. I wound up finding a job. After about a year, I wound up starting my own company. And the whole cycle of what I was involved in there in New Orleans, the whole city was extremely damaged from the storm. So there was a lot of, there was a common goals of cleaning up, of rebuilding. And I got to be involved in this big loop of service providing as far as my company being carpentry and painting services and just connecting with other people on this common bond of cleaning up and rebuilding the city. And when there's common goals in place, it's amazing what people can do. And I was shocked. I was blown away. My business grew very quickly, and I started to experience a lot of great success, and so much so that I felt like I wanted to write this book and help share and encourage other people at a lot of the way that the world at large is out there saying you're supposed to do it or how to pursue it in order to be successful. Really, a lot of that, the information that's out in the world is inaccurate. And from a person who just decided, you know what, I'm going to set out on a path and I'm going to accomplish some things, and then did, I decided that it was important to share that with other people to be motivating and encouraging, because literally we can all have, do, and be whatever we want in life. My experience in New Orleans showed me that, and then it gave me a lot of enthusiasm to encourage and teach that to other people.
And David, when you talk about transformation, you, me, anybody, you know, and there are things that you've got in your press release, you know, you changed every area of your life, finances, physical, mental health, relationships, spirituality, because the transformation isn't a piece of it. If you do a piece of it, you're going to lack in a lot of areas, and that in and of itself will dilute what you have. I'm looking at this, and wouldn't Katrina almost be your life? Not that your life was a disaster, but we live our life in a certain way and we take it on, and then if we decide to clean it up, you go through those stages you're talking about. So Katrina in and of itself is almost like a symbol of the way most people are living their lives.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the great news is it doesn't matter where you're at right now. I mean, literally at the moment that I created my business, I had about $400 in my bank account, a mortgage payment due. I really didn't know what I was going to do, and I had quit my job from my previous employer. It just felt like it was the right thing to do. I wasn't even sure what was I going to do. And then this is when I learned to enact all the 12 keys that I talk about in my book. Number one, vision. I decided to see a picture of the life I wanted to be living rather than the life I was living. We all, you know, are in whatever circumstance and situation we're in, and this is the analogy you're making about Katrina. It's like, my life, it had some issues, it had some problems, but I decided I would focus on a vision of the life that I wanted to be living and ask questions of myself and of the universe, like, how can I have this? And that started leading to taking the correct actions, towards setting the correct goals, towards the habits that encourage and develop success. And that's what I want to teach to other people more than anything possible, is that there are dynamics. We live in a system of cause and effect, and no matter where you're at, no matter how down and out you are, in my book I talk about John Paul DeJoria. He's a co-founder of Paul Mitchell Hair Care Products and Patron Tequila, House of Blues Club. He's been homeless. So is David Murdoch. Both of those guys are on the Forbes 400 list of billionaires. I mean, you can be down and out and in jail and come back to the highest heights of life. So no matter where you're at, that doesn't set the story for where you're going. What you're telling yourself today, what you're thinking about, what you're repeating in your mind, what you're visualizing, what you're taking action toward, that's what's determining where you're going.
I knew a woman some years back who had kind of a, she lived kind of a life of poverty. She joined the service and she got out of the service and she ended up getting married and they ended up with no money and she ended up divorced and homeless on the street. And she did basically what you were talking about doing. She got a hold of it. She went to school. She got her doctorate and so on and so forth. And she started to teach other people how not to live a life of poverty, how they can have what they want. And she would walk into a workshop and she would say, what's the first step? What's the first thing that you do if you want to get yourself out of the mess you're in and take a step up to a new life? People were saying, you know, don't use your credit card, you know, watch this, don't spend that. And once they got done, she looked at them and said, no, you have to have, you just said it, you have to have a vision. You have to see yourself not broke anymore. You have to see yourself with money. You have to see yourself happy. Because if you don't see it, you don't have the vision, and if there's not that picture in your mind, what your mind does, it creates what you don't have, and that's normal for you. So you're right. If you can't see it, you can't have it.
Well, and that's the thing, is that we're all visualizing all the time. This is what I'm trying to teach people, is this is the dynamics that are already in play for us. It's learning how to intentionally visualize what outcomes you want, opposed to the outcomes you think are coming or what you expect. Learn to expect better. And I teach you all those things in the book. I say, learn to expect best-case scenarios. So many people worry, and worry is really just rehearsing worst-case scenarios. I teach you how to rehearse best-case scenarios, because if you want best-case scenarios to come true in your life, which we all do, you got to practice them mentally. We never spontaneously just find ourselves suddenly on an airplane or on a vacation or involved in a career that we like or don't like. We're always thinking, and then our physical reality is following. And I'm just trying to encourage and teach to other people that the dynamics of the most successful people all time, everybody, Oprah, Mark Cuban, Donald Trump, Mahatma Gandhi, Jennifer Lopez, whoever achieves a high level of success, they are seeing themselves at place long before they're physically living that ultimate life.
And I think the biggest problem that we have right now, David, is there's so many mixed messages out there. The economy, the society, the culture, there's so many confused people out there that they're frightened to death to get that vision. And we're being told constantly, there's no money, there's no money, there's a recession. I'm sorry. There is a lot of money out there. And when they talk about, and you know, the 8 to 10% or 9 to 10, 11% jobless rate out there, they're not talking about the 89 to 90%, 91% of the people who are still working. There are businesses today that have millions of dollars in the coffers. They're just not letting it go because they're not sure where what's going to happen to it within the next 6 months or so. So to move through all of this, we've got to do exactly what you're talking about here. You have to take the individual responsibility of knowing that you can do it. And if you do it and I do it and everybody else does it, the R word, recession, doesn't exist.
Well, and that's absolutely right. In fact, I would encourage even to say that right now, because we're in a time where I would call it a transitional time. You know, businesses are changing, our technology is breaking through, communication is changing. We're at an interesting time in history, and I would say it's the absolute best time, because when things are working correctly, nobody's really open to new ideas. When things are broken or not working or having issues, the world becomes open to new ideas and new solutions, and that's when innovations are developed, and that's where we're at. It's all of us have the ability to come up with improved ideas. For example, I own a business that is a durable decorative paint business. And essentially, we paint this decorative product in place of wallpaper for commercial applications. And this gets used in the southeast United States, where they have mold and mildew problems, but it costs the same or less than wallpaper, the existing thing that's there, and it's an improvement because it's less maintenance, it's easier to deal with, it's more adaptable, you don't have to do a bunch of removal and disposal. When we remove it, you just paint right back on top of it in a few years, 7 years or something like that. Anyway, what I'm saying is that because there was a problem with the wallpaper, it opened the door as an opportunity to come up with a solution that would be better than wallpaper in a humid climate. So right now there's tons of opportunities to innovate and see improvements to the system, and anybody who puts an improvement into the system is benefits and succeeds. So that's what we all have the ability to do.
Okay, what do we do right now? What is the average person sitting around having breakfast in the morning that are going to go do what they do during the day? What do we do? What's a step? What are some of the things that we can do to make these changes?
Okay, well, the easiest thing is to read my book. That's why I wrote it, and that's why I put it out like that. And which you can get, in fact, I'm going to give everybody a free copy of the ebook just by going to my website. So that's for starters, thesolid.com. You can get a copy of the 12 keys. But just saying you don't get a copy of the book and you just want to know, immediately in the morning, I like to wake up and I like to identify what I have going for me. I like to just take a moment to be grateful, throw out a little gratitude and say, good morning, universe. Thank you for that nice sleep. Thank you for this beautiful home. Thank you for my wonderful opportunities. Thank you for my blessings. And begin thinking about our goals. In the book, I talk about goals. Those are specific targets for our attention. And this is where a lot of people don't have specific goals. In fact, a study that I cite in the book that was done of Harvard grad students, only a very small amount in a Harvard MBA class in a study in 1979 had written goals. But 10 years later, those group with the written specific goals were out-earning all the rest of the class by 10 times combined. It's because if we specifically will take the time to look at and clearly think up what is our best-case scenarios in life, where would we ultimately like to go, who would we like to be, what would we like to have, what would we like to be doing, not what do we think is realistic, just without limits, what do we want to achieve, to become, and to have? And by asking and seeing a picture of ourselves in those ways and setting specific attainable goals throughout there, we all lead ourselves towards that promised land of that life. And it's believing. We got to have an open mind. We got to be open to some new ideas. You got to be open that changing your way of thinking can change your life. I encounter a lot of people who really resist that. But ultimately, like that woman you said you saw speak, you have to be willing to change your thoughts if you want to produce new results and new actions. And like I'm saying, my book, and there's a lot of other great books out there and information of people who will tell you just what I'm saying. Think it, believe it, dream it, take action towards it. The universe will help it come true for you. I've seen it in my life. I've seen the lives of hundreds of other people. And it's a message that I'm passionate about sharing.
Well, and absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. Project ahead. Based on, I'll give you two answers here. Based on the way we're going now, where do you see us in 10, 15 years? And based on what you're saying we can do with what we have already, what do you think we can do in 10, 15 years?
Well, I think that I recently read a book by a guy named Dr. Irvin Laszlo. If you're familiar with him, he's written a lot of books. And this one is called 2012, Chaos Point. Chaos Point, or the Tipping Point, 2012 and beyond, something like that. And he's saying, this is the two options we really have. The system either breaks down, or we have breakthroughs. And I'm hoping, I'm optimistic that we're going to have breakthroughs more than breakdowns, or rather, as the system does break down, perhaps, we will make some breakthroughs. So what I see is that if we go on right now, business as usual, attitude as usual, negative media as usual, we're on a crash course for disaster. And I don't think there's very many people who disagree. I think that our country has lost its way as far as being innovative and creative and understanding that it's us who set the path. It's not the government. It's not about our elected officials. It's about us as individuals. This country was founded by individual entrepreneurs, people who were passionate and said, you know what, this is the course for this land. Who wants to be a part of it? And we've kind of lost that spirit, and I would like to be part of the movement that's bringing it back and encouraging people to take individual responsibility, to understand that when we work cooperatively and work together, look, no one person builds a city. No one person builds a road or builds a house. Look at what we're capable of when we cooperatively pool our resources and do stuff together in harmony, teamwork. That's the 12th goal, what I talk about. So I see the possibility for total disaster and devastation, but I more strongly believe in that humans are strong, resilient, smart, and that we are going to pull through, and that there's massive changes on the horizon. And so what I see is that I believe that focused on ideas like global sustainability, on distribution of clean water, on distribution of food and medicine around the planet, on some higher common goals, I believe that humanity is going to really evolve into a new renaissance. I believe that we are going to connect on a global level and institute some sort of global economic conditions and make some dramatic improvements for generations to come. That's my hope. That's what I'm working towards.
By the way, great hope. Now, we're just about out of time. One more time, David, slowly, though, with your website.
Absolutely. It is www.thesolid.com. That is thesolid.com, and I've got tons of free videos. I've got a bunch of different ebooks, and I will give you, if you sign up to my website right now, I will send you a free copy of the 12 Keys as an ebook. I want to get this information out. I want people to share it and enjoy it and pass it around. It's helped me to live a much happier, prosperous life, and it's helped a lot of other people too.
Wonderful. Hey, David, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to being back on.
Oh, you bet. Take care. Good night.
Thank you.
As they say in this myth, that's all there is. There isn't any more. We've shared a moment. And as the moment ends, I got a funny feeling we're parting out as friends. Your tears and laughter will linger after they've torn down these dusty walls. If I had this to do again.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser, and that, my friends, is a wrap.
Evening, we're new again. I would spend it with you again, but now